Good morning, 8:53 a.m. on April 3rd. Hi. What is it, Wednesday? I have to remember to stop and pick up the milk on the way into the house. There's a full tub of milk today. My older daughter has apparently had mono, or has been having mono. Seventeen and a half minutes. The first mile, not a great mile, but my thighs ache today. Anyway, apparently she had mono. We got her call last night. The screening came back. And yes, she has Epstein-Barr. Yes. But it's apparently on the backside of full-blown mononucleosis. She's already, her body is creating the antibodies, and that's why the screening came back negative, because she's getting over it. There was just enough in there for the amoxicillin to trigger her for the rash. So, yeah, that explains why she's feeling not anywhere near as tired and sleepy as she has for the last several weeks. Kind of explains it. So, what if you lose a few? Good news is that she's got spring break, her last 4 days of spring break. Wow, UPS is early today. To get her act together, get some homework done, get some reading done. And yeah, cool. This is good. Oh, young daughter still in California. Haven't heard from her today. I heard from her yesterday. She was exhausted. Apparently they're keeping them jumping, which is good. Yesterday I was looking for a book. I was looking for a math textbook. Honestly, I don't remember how much I said about this yesterday, but when I was in junior high, I was thinking it was sixth grade, but it might have been seventh. They, back before new math, there was a lot of research done into math education, math instruction, from the school mathematics study group. And this was a direct result of the Sputnik panic in the late 50s. And a man named Ed Begel was the spearhead behind that. And with the help of the National Science Foundation and a few other people, he put together a research team to study and develop math education in a new way. And I was very excited. I was very overwhelmed when I first started taking this course. Earl Sweatland was the teacher. It must have been seventh grade. Anyway, it was a funny book. It was a paperback. It was the first paperback textbook I'd ever seen. It had a kind of a leatherette, pebbled paper cover. And terrible book. It was only meant to be used once and probably thrown away, which explains why there aren't very many copies of it around. I haven't been able to find one this side of Texas. In all in school and university libraries. I take it back. There's one down in Colorado Springs at a library there. I could probably get it interlibrary loan if I ask my wife nicely. But I also found it in full PDF, a scanned version. And there are a couple. There's a full version of it on Eric. And There's one at Buffalo State, and I've downloaded it, both volume 1 and volume 2, and loaded it into Calibre. So I have a PDF version of the book. Now, I wish I could get a Kindle version. I wonder if I could get permission to republish it. Because the book itself is simply amazing. I've thought a lot about it, I've been thinking a lot about it, and as my memories have been surfacing about it, and having spent some time with it last night, I read the first few pages and got to the first set of examples. And I remember these examples. They were so for a 10-year-old or 12-year-old, whatever old I was, 11-year-old, hell, 7th grade, 4 and 7, had to be 11 when I started. So 50 years ago, I still remember these examples. And the first one has to do with a boat. And a guy weighs 200 pounds, and his two sons each weigh 100 pounds. And they have a boat that can hold 200 pounds, and all three of them need to get across the river. So the question is, how do the three of them get across the river? Now, this is introduction to math as logic, to math as analysis. In a certain sense, it's a using mathematical concepts which are part of everyday life to not to solve a calculation, which is what most people think about math, but to solve a process. And of course the answer is the 200-pound boys take the boat across. One boy brings the boat back. Father takes the boat across alone. Second boy brings the boat back. Both boys take the boat back across. They're all on the same side of the river with the boat, never having to carry more than 200 pounds at a time. So it's actually pretty straightforward once you get used to the idea that the travel can be both ways, and that the goal is to never exceed a capacity of 200 pounds, but you can actually have less than 200 pounds in the boat at a time, and that will work. So it's also not linear. Once you get over the idea that everybody has to go across the river, that the idea that the boat has to come back and somebody has to bring it back is an important concept. And there's several more like that along that vein. One is a farmer who has a fox, a goose, and a bag of corn. He can't leave the fox and the goose together, or the fox will eat the goose. He can't leave the goose and the corn together, or the goose will eat the corn. But the boat he has to go across the river, there's only room for him and one other thing. So how does he get all three of them across the river and onto market? The answer, of course, is he takes the goose across. Leaves the goose because the fox won't eat the grain. He comes back, gets the grain, takes the grain across, takes the goose back to the fox, picks the fox up, takes the fox across, drops the fox, goes back and gets the goose. And at no time is the fox or the goose alone on the shore. And at no time is the goose and the corn alone on the shore. So the math is really straightforward. It works out quite well. It's a simple program. It's a simple problem that is the kind of problem that we have to solve all the time. And yet we seldom ever see those in math texts. I really do credit that book with my being involved in computers at an early age. This idea of high-level mathematics, non-computational mathematics, that actually programming represents, was a powerful idea to a guy who couldn't remember the multiplication tables, who couldn't remember the four times table or the, God help me, the eight times table. I can now, mostly. But addition was a problem too. And for me, the watershed on addition was actually a card game. The card game Cribbage, which I actually mentioned in Captain's Share, I think. Monkpole. Cribbage is a card game where you have to add. And if you can, you have a pegboard and you peg holes. The first one to race around the pegboard wins. You could do it with a piece of paper, but the pegboard really is the artifact, the focal point of the game. And so you, I think it's seven cards, you deal seven cards. The one person leads a card. The other person has to try to either match it and get two holes, or get 15. So if you put a card down and the total of the cards at that point is 15, then you get 2 points. It seems to me that there's also a 30 pointer. So you get two holes for 30. There's some other points that you get. I forget what they are now, but I'd have to look it back up again. But so when you're playing a card game and your opponent is waiting for you to make a move, then you have to learn to add quickly to get to 15. So Cribbage was actually my entry drug into learning how to add, to forcing me to learn to add, because every day after supper my father wanted to play Cribbage. And we'd play a couple of games of Cribbage. And it worked out. I learned arithmetic. Eventually I learned my multiplication tables. And I kept a slide rule. Yeah, slide rule. Actually, I owned several slide rules. I don't have any more of them, which is too bad. I had a very nice, I want to say, it was some sort of plastic. It wasn't ivory, but it was some sort of plastic that had very, very delicate etching on it for all of the little marks. And I was really able to do lots of work with the slide rule because I learned how to manipulate the slide rule. Not because I had any idea of the numeric mathematical foundation of addition of logarithms for multiplication or anything like that. It was just, okay, you do this, you put it there, and you move this and line it up, that's the answer. And so I learned things like extrapolation. So, okay, it's between these two marks, and those two marks represent these two numbers, so it's about a third of the way along. So, yeah, math, arithmetic came to me eventually. But key to my understanding of mathematics, of higher mathematics, was this book from the school mathematics study group called Mathematics for Junior High School, Volume 1, Part 1. What we called around our school, the Yellow Book. And these problems, they had three or four really relatively straightforward ones, like with an 8-gallon and a 5-gallon bucket, can you measure out exactly 2 gallons? And the answer is, well, yeah, easily. Fill the 5-gallon bucket and pour it into the 8, and then fill the 5-gallon bucket again and fill the 8. Okay, there's 2 gallons left in the 5-gallon bucket because 3 is what's left in the 8-gallon bucket. You take 3 gallons out of 5 gallons and you're left with 2. So it's really easy when you know the trick. It's really easy to me and my 60-year-old brain because it's the kind of problem that I've been solving all my life. For an 11-year-old, that was magical. That was very cool. And there was the eight marble problem with the balance scale. That was a toughie. That was an example of the first answer is not usually right. Eight marbles, all same size, all same shape, all same color. One marble is heavier. doesn't say how much heavier, just heavier. You have a balance scale. And how do you find a heavy marble by only making two weighings? Now, the obvious solution starts with put four in each pan. And then you'll find out which group of four has the heavy marble in it. Problem is, that's the wrong solution. Answer is, put three marbles in each pan and hold two out. If one of the pans, if the pans are in balance, then one of the two held marbles is the heavy one. Weigh them and you've got the answer. If one of the pans is heavier, that collection of three marbles holds the heavy marble. Take those three marbles and put one in each pan. If the pans balance, the one that's not in the pan, that is of the three, the one that didn't get put in a pan, is the heavy one. Of course, if the pans are not balanced, then the heavy one is the one that pulls the balance beam down. But this idea that the answer might not be the obvious path, that there are paths that yield results that are not the main path, that are the paths that are not obvious, that are in certain instance, in a certain sense, counterintuitive. Great problems, great way to introduce the subject, great way to sequence this content in such a way that you hook a young mind on something that is bordering on magic and yet is fully supported as part of what it is you're trying to learn in terms of mathematics. It's pick the right process, pick the right calculation, validate your results. How do you do that? How do you make that process available to 10, 11, 12-year-olds? So, it's a fascinating book from a pedagogical standpoint. And having completed my PhD in educational technology, having examined issues of instructional design and sequencing and content and how do you design an educational experience that actually fosters learning as opposed to fosters test-taking. It's a far cry from what wound up being the so-called new math textbooks, which are just dreadful because they ignore all the sequencing, they ignore all the magic, they suck the life out of it in order to present it in ways that are logical to 40-year-old textbook writers, but not at all engaging to 10, 11, and 12-year-old minds. And that's Ed Begel's genius. The genius of the school mathematics study group was that they were able to do that. And I'm not quite sure exactly why it was so important for me to hunt that book down right now. But it was something that I was thinking about. I got a bug in my bonnet about it, and I couldn't let it go. And now I found it. And it's just as magical as it was then. Yuck, 18 and a half minutes on the second mile. Yeah, I've been walking, talking fast and walking slow on the second mile, but at least I've been walking. So here I am, back at the back gate. Or more precisely, heading for the cooler where the milk and the eggs are. Get those inside, get them taken care of. But that's also where I say tomorrow is another day. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.